Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you may be listening to this podcast. I hope all of you had a wonderful week. I thoroughly enjoyed the all-class conference call that we had on Wednesday, so I'm really thankful for all of those of you who were able to make it, and I hope that those of you who are unable to make it get a chance to listen to it if you haven't had a chance to so far. And I also want to give a shout-out to Marianne because she celebrated her birthday this week on Wednesday, so happy birthday to Marianne. What I'd like to do in this podcast is what we do every week. I'd like to pick out a couple key takeaways from the end of the week forum. So and all of your conversations were fascinating to read, but there are a couple things I'd like to pick out, and we can continue thinking about them as we continue in the course. And then I'll lay out the learning objectives for this coming week and what my hopes are for all of you with the content, exercises, etc. So the first thing I'd like to mention is that after this week, a lot of you are thinking anew about the concept of conflict and what it is, you know, and I think a lot of people came into this week and when they heard the word conflict, they immediately thought of something negative. And so I'm thinking specifically here about a conversation that took place between Cassandra and Meow. And one thing I really liked about this is that Meow brought in this concept from the Chinese language. And she said that she really valued or enjoyed that the author brought up the idea of the meaning of crisis in Chinese. And that in Chinese, they translate the two words, or the word crisis into two words, risk and opportunity. And she didn't really think about this until reading the article, that there's this dual meaning, that while taking risk, and there's some danger in that, there's also opportunity. And so she also saw this as reconnecting with past week's reading on positive psychology. There's a lot of different ways that we can understand and approach conflict as something that is dangerous and that we want to avoid, or something that is actually, it opens up opportunity. And Cassandra, I think also, she mentioned this as well in her post and from the conversations, that she really liked this idea of the Chinese symbol of crisis meaning both danger and opportunity. So I wanted to give a couple examples specifically of how conflict can actually lead to positive outcomes. And I think this is something that's really valuable to use with your students, because it's one thing to say that, oh, there can be positive outcomes of conflict. It's another to give specific examples of what some of those positive outcomes can be. So first, let me just outline what obviously some of the negative outcomes or forces of conflict are that we're all familiar with, ergo why we normally associate it with something negative. So first is that conflict can divert attention away from important issues. It can damage the morale of an individual or an entire community or class. It can cause polarization. It can reinforce differences in values that are already there, and it can produce irresponsible and regrettable behaviors. And I think often, sometimes in our context, in the classroom, violent and physical reactions when engaged in conflict. So those are the common negative forces of conflict, or negative forces that we commonly associate with conflict. So what are some of the positive forces of conflict? And I think when I say these, you'll probably be able to recall from your own experience how these positive forces have emerged from conflict. So the first is it can stimulate interest. So an issue or a concept or an idea that at first didn't really seem like it had that much meaning, the second there's a conflict around it, all of a sudden it can stimulate interest. Another positive force of conflict can be the means for problems to be heard. When a lot of you were talking about your different conflict styles, sometimes it's just avoidance, and I don't want to talk about it, or I'm in denial about being in conflict or having a problem. So when conflicts actually arise, that can be the means for problems to be heard, and that release and that communication and that sharing of that problem or issue can actually be very positive. It can increase cohesiveness. So sometimes there are differences, and a conflict needs to emerge in order for those differences to be worked out. Otherwise, they're going to remain. So again, sometimes conflict is necessary for that positive growth. The fourth, and I think this one is kind of almost the most important, and it's the broadest, is that it promotes change. And I would actually say that any substantial, significant change is not possible without conflict. And it goes to this whole idea of the Hegelian dialectic of thesis, antithesis, synthesis. That there's one idea, then there's an opposing idea, and then out of those two opposing ideas, there emerges a synthesis and a new way, a new status quo, a new change. I think that's a fundamental idea in nonviolence and nonviolent action. And then the fifth positive force of conflict is that it provides a means to work together. So sometimes when a conflict arises, it forces people in a very necessary way to actually work through those differences, work together to actually create something that people can agree upon. So those are the positive forces of conflict. And like I said, I think that a lot of you can probably relate to that and maybe don't even recognize that that positive outcome was a result of a conflict. So I didn't want to bring that up because I think that's an important thing to take away from this. And I think it also goes to a quote that I think it was a Cassandra. I think this is one of the quotes that you pulled out. That you said, quote, whenever a teacher responds to one student, 20 or 30 others learn a lesson. And you said that this reminds you that you're always a model for your students and as such must model the behaviors that you want to see in them. So again, when there's a conflict that is emerging, figuring out ways for those positive forces to grow from that is a great thing to model for your students. The second thing I'd like to bring up is this idea of the conflict escalator. And this was something that Alex Caudana brought up when he was speaking with Courtney. And I want to bring up the idea of a conflict escalator versus a peace escalator. So what's a conflict escalator? Alex mentioned this in his post, and he said that it's an analogy that we use a lot in conflict resolution. And the idea is that the higher you go on the escalator, the more feelings become attached to the conflict. Quote, the higher we go on the escalator, the closer we come to violence, and the harder it is to come down. And he said that he never thought of conflict like this before, and that based on past experiences, when feelings become attached to a conflict, there is high potential for things to, quote, go nuclear and destructive. And in the peace education gathering 2 weeks ago, I referenced this idea of the conflict escalator, but I changed it a little bit and said, well, let's think about an escalator, but let's think about a peace escalator. Because we want our feelings to be attached to a situation or to an environment or to a relationship in such a way that it increases peace or nonviolent approaches to that relationship or to that conflict. And I wanted to pull another quote that Cassandra shared from Gandhi, which I think touches on this idea of a peace escalator. And this is when he's talking about nonviolence and what it is. And she quoted Gandhi, who said, "My optimism rests on my belief in the infinite possibilities of the individual to develop nonviolence. The more you develop it in your own being, the more infectious it becomes till it overwhelms your surroundings and by might oversweeps the world." And I think that perfectly captures this idea of the peace escalator. And a lot of the daily peace actions that we've been participating in and talking about, reflecting on, those are in many ways us taking steps or moving up in the peace escalator. The other thing I wanted to bring up when it comes to conflict escalators versus peace escalators is the idea of developing an emotional vocabulary. And I wanted to share briefly an exercise that I've used a lot that has worked really well with a variety of age groups around developing our emotional vocabulary. Because one thing that came up in the Waging Peace in Our Schools reading is that oftentimes we don't have the words or the vocabulary to accurately explain what it is that we are feeling. So sometimes, particularly young kids, they know happy and sad or mad and happy. But sometimes mad isn't an accurate way to explain the way that you're actually feeling. Mad can mean frustrated. It can mean tired. It can mean embarrassed. It can mean, disrespected. So when people and students have those words, those emotional vocabulary words, understand what they mean, it's very empowering, because when they are experiencing conflict, they can go to the person with whom they are in conflict with, or to their teacher or somebody else or a parent, and say, this is accurately how I'm feeling. And so the person with whom they're in conflict, or the person who's trying to resolve or mediate the conflict, has much more information and can more accurately approach the parties of that conflict. And so what I do is I hand out sheets of paper with these vocabulary words on them and the definition underneath. And each person in a circle has one of these emotional vocabulary words. And then I invite a student to come into the middle of the circle and share a story around a particular kind of conflict. It can be a particular with a conflict with a family member, a conflict with another one of their colleagues or a peer, another student, and so forth. And then just tell the story. But I ask them to tell the story without using any emotional words. So they just explain what happens without saying how they felt, which can be difficult to do, but they do it. And when they finish telling that story, I ask everyone in the circle who's holding an emotional vocabulary word that they think is an emotion or a feeling that that person who just told the story may have felt during that experience. And so 5, 6, 7, 8 students maybe put up their vocabulary words. And the person who just told the story looks around the circle to see what people heard. So in telling that story, what did people think that person was going through emotionally when they were going through that? That can be a really great experience just for the person who told the story, is to have all those people listening to them and then reflecting back to them, these are the emotions that I heard coming through, without you actually saying the words. And then sometimes you can ask the students who are holding up the words and say, why do you think this student experienced that emotion during this situation? And then the person who told the story goes around and said, yes, I think that word is accurate. That word is accurate. Yes, I definitely felt frustrated, or I definitely felt disrespected, and so forth. So it's a way to constantly connect, to understand vocabulary words and connect them with personal stories of that people can relate to. The third thing that I'd like us to keep thinking about is the circle process. And we really just scratched the surface of the circle process this week. There's so much more to the circle process, and it's just an amazing method and practice to integrate into any type of environment, work, school, what have you. And I say we just scratched the surface because broadly, circle processes, those can be connected to restorative approaches to justice. They can be associated with just talking and sharing and dialogue. It doesn't have to be around, again, some type of restorative approach. It can just be a way to communicate with one another. And for those of you who have participated in the conference call, I've tried to model that circle process on the conference calls. That's why we set up the clock face, and we imagine ourselves sitting at a table, and we're able to go around one person at a time. We're able to pass the question on to other people who are sitting in that circle. So I've been trying to model the circle process on the phone calls. For those of you who are really interested in the circle process, I highly recommend checking out a book called The Little Book of Circle Processes, which is by Kay Pranus and Howard Zehr. And actually, I was just reading this, and I was wondering if Howard Zehr is in any relation to you, Marianne. I don't know if there's any family connection there, but that would be pretty cool if there were. And what I'll actually do in an email is I'll send out a little handbook written by Kay Pranus called The Circle Keeper's Handbook. So that's free. You don't have to buy it, but there's some really great information in there about circle processes. The other thing that I think is really valuable, if you are interested in incorporating circle processes into your teaching and into your classrooms, is to provide students with a handout or just give an overview of what's the difference between dialogue and debate. Because talking circles are really designed to foster dialogue as opposed to debate. And so one of the handouts I use here, and I'll just reference it very quickly. And so I'll send this out as well, but on one side there's a column that says debate. On the other side there's a column that says dialogue. And I'll just read a couple of them. So, for example, debate is adversarial. It attempts to prove the other side wrong. Versus dialogue is collaborative, where people work together to find a shared view and a common understanding. Two very different approaches to communicating and talking about a particular issue. Debate is about winning, assuming that there's a right answer and that one person in that debate has the right answer. Dialogue, on the other hand, is about exploring, assuming that there are many pieces to an answer that can be shared by many. A debate is, when you're engaged in debate, you're listening to the other person and you're listening for flaws in order to make counter-arguments. That's what you're listening for, and that's what you're trying to hear. In dialogue, you're not listening for flaws, you're listening to understand, and you're listening to make links and to reveal shared views. So the list goes on and on and on, and I think that's a key distinction to make before jumping into a talking circle process, is the difference between debate and dialogue, is that talking circles, we're not here to debate, we're here to dialogue. And the atmosphere can change quite dramatically when those distinctions are made. So the learning objectives and my hopes for all of you for this coming week, where the peace education topic we're exploring is environmental sustainability. So this week we explore the topic of environmental sustainability, and we're going to be looking at the Earth Charter and the various ways in which its principles can be and have been integrated into classrooms and communities. And I think you're going to read the Earth Charter, as many people have, and I think a lot of people look at it and think, wow, these are some really lofty ideals, and they're great written down on paper, but what does this actually look like in our community and in a classroom? And so a lot of the readings are around, again, how the principles of the Earth Charter have been integrated into classrooms and communities. This week, we also focus on how to use the outdoors as a learning environment and to integrate elements of the natural world into our learning spaces as a way to understand environmental systems and issues such as the materials economy, climate change, health, wellness, and conservation. So the learning objectives for this week are that you'll be able to identify ways in which the principles of the Earth Charter are being actualized around the world. Two, you'll be able to calculate your carbon footprint. Three, you'll be able to evaluate different environmental sustainability curricula and lesson plans. And the different curricula and lesson plans that will be made available to you this week are for different age groups. So definitely pick the one that is most relevant to the age group that you work with. And then finally, you will be able to think creatively about adapting environmental education curricula for one's own educational context. So I really want you to take some of this prepared curricula and think about ways to adapt it and change it and evolve it. And then the exercises for this week, the daily peace action is called Being Present in Beauty. And it actually integrates a little bit of, how do I put it? You're asked to, in many ways, explore elements of the natural world while also integrating some new technology. So you'll get an explanation of what this daily peace action is in your email, but I think this will be really cool, and we're going to co-create something together throughout the week and hopefully have something really beautiful come Sunday. And then, as always, you'll talk with your learning partner on the phone, and then you'll contribute to Forum 5.1 on Sunday. So I think you'll all really enjoy this week. The content continues to build off, each week. And I look forward to what we create together.